ladies and gentlemen. It's Hawk coming to you live. It is 11/22/2019. And we are 56 years. 56 years since the deep state, the powers that be, the CIA, the military intelligence, those who own the stock in the Federal Reserve, whoever it was, the big oil crowd in Texas, LBJ, the whole nine yards, a lot of people colluded to assassinate John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. Now, I'm just looking here at a book that a guy that I met one time named Robert J. Groden, who did a book, The Killing of a President, and he was the House Select Committee on Intelligence on the Kennedy assassination. He was the photographic expert. And this is an interesting book. And then based on the acoustic evidence at the time, which was a Dictabelt transmission, and oh, there's all kind of stuff that tries to invalidate this or invalidate that or change the look of it or say it's not so and all of that. But basically, when you get down to it, it's fairly accurate. And I'm just going to talk to you. Shot number one. Abraham Zapruder's film is a relentless clock of the assassination, and it is not only gives a visual record of the reactions to and the sources of the gunshots, but also represents a device to verify the timing between shots, which occurred in an incredibly short time span, less than 9 seconds. Okay. The first shot that was fired missed the car completely and hit the pavement. This was corroborated by at least two witnesses. Why did it miss? There's speculation that the gunman was anxious pulling the trigger too soon. And that particular shot, they believe, came from the Dow Tech building's second floor. So consequently, that supposedly was Charlie Nicoletti, mob hitman. Now, could have been somebody else as well, but let's just leave it at that. The second shot, which struck the president's throat, was the first to hit. It had to come from the front, with the most logical point of origination being the grassy knoll. And this is where Kennedy grabs his throat. The third shot was fired most likely from the western end of the book depository. The Oswald Nest is on the eastern end, but this is on the western end of the book depository and struck Governor Connally from behind. It entered by the right armpit, passed through his chest, and exited below the right nipple at an angle far too steep to have come from the so-called Oswald window. Shot number four. The fourth shot struck the president in the back, 6 inches below the shoulder line, to the right of the spinal column. He still sat erect, held up by his back brace. This fourth shot, the third bullet to actually strike a human, is supposed to have traveled through the president's body, exited his throat, entered Connally's back by his right armpit, exited his chest, blah, blah, blah. This is the magic bullet kind of thing, the single bullet. But that's still baloney. I don't care what they say. The fourth shot came from behind, possibly from the so-called Oswald window, because there was a picture of somebody up in that window at that period of time that was seen from the street and is in the photographic evidence that Robert Groden presented and that was presented at the House Select Committee on Assassination. But it also could have come from the second floor of the Dow Text building. And it struck the president in the back, as I said. In pictures of the Dow Text building, you can see a guy sitting on the stairway, the fire escape stairway outside of it there, right on the second floor, and there are windows right below him that apparently have somebody in them and may have in the pictures, particularly from the Altgens took the famous photograph, which the Warren Commission severely cropped, okay? But you can see in certain close-ups that there may be a gun coming out of there, and that was one of the sniper's nests. Now, shot number five. The fifth shot came from behind the stockade fence on the knoll. May also have been almost simultaneous hit coming up from the manhole right at street level, possibly there, and also almost simultaneously with the stockade fence hit, but most definitely the grassy knoll there. And I've stood right there, right at that spot, and looked at that whole deal, and that stuff is close. It ain't no 100-yard shot or anything like that. That is not that far of a distance. But this is the bullet that hit him and blew his head up. But that wasn't the only shot after. There was additional shots, okay? Shot number six was a half second after the shot to the president's head, and a sixth bullet struck Governor Connally in the right wrist. It's in the Zapruder film. That's the timing. I incidentally met somebody who worked on Oliver Stone's movie. Met two people that were there working on it. I met some people that assisted behind the grassy knoll, putting the puff of smoke up, worked for Weapons Master or whatever. They worked with them, and I knew a guy that did that. And then I also knew a woman who was a special assistant to Oliver Stone. Let's just say that she was able to, on Stone's behalf, acquire one of the original copies of the Zapruder film. I know more about that individual, but I don't need to bring it up at this time. Additional shots. There were at least two other shots fired in Dealey Plaza that day, perhaps even more. Three apparent bullet marks were found at various places in the plaza the afternoon of the killing, one on the south curb of Elm and one on the north sidewalk of Elm and one by the south curb of Main Street. The latter mark was caused by a bullet that hit the curb and splintered. A fragment of metal and some concrete struck the bystander James Tague on the cheek while he was standing near the triple overpass. There were two definite shots, the book says here, and one probable additional bullet hits the ground. And basically what they're saying is that one of these was from the western side of the school book depository, and another one, maybe two, was from on top of the Dallas County Records building, wherein they did find a Sabot slug, a cartridge that would have held a Sabot type round. So it's interesting. Now you say, well, Hawk, just where'd you meet old Robert Groden? Well, longtime listeners to the show maybe have heard me tell this a couple times, because I tend to tell it close to the Kennedy assassination time period. But this book is worth getting. The Killing of a President, Robert J. Groden, forward by Oliver Stone, The Complete Photographic Record of the JFK Assassination, The Conspiracy and the Cover-Up, and another book of Groden's is The Search for Lee Harvey Oswald. And that is the most interesting book in and of itself. Let me just pull that out real quick right here, because there are so many different pictures of Oswald, different sizes, heights, different looks, the whole nine yards. It's The Evolution of Lee Harvey Oswald. There's so many different ones. Too Many Oswalds, Chapter 19 says. Okay. And they did a lot to, dip him in the doo-doo. Okay, let me tell you that. But if we go into this, and incidentally, here's what was written to me, 10-12-1997, Dallas, Texas, Dealey Plaza. And it was written, "May all the truth be known soon. Best always, Robert Groden." Okay? So I met him there. And I was just walking down, and I walked in. I said, "I'm going to take a look at this thing." I happened to be on Dallas on business. And it's quite interesting, you know? Quite interesting that we would see him there, or that we would be there at the same time. And to tell the story, which is quite interesting, it was sitting there, and Robert Groden was there, and he had a guy that was sort of outside fielding questions and sort of his security. And Groden was inside of the pergola, that little building, the little Greek pergola, by the grassy knoll. And consequently, he was in there, and he had a little video display player, and he had videotapes, and he had several copies of his different books. And he was down there, and he would, usually in those days, he would sit, and sometimes people, a lot of tourists come by and look at it. And then he would sometimes sell a book or whatever. And so I went in there, and I said, "Oh, well, shoot, man, you're Robert Groden." I knew him, because I'd also seen his book, you know, before, where he was involved in another book, High Treason, where he wrote it with Harrison Edward Livingston. So I knew what Groden looked like. And so I bought two of his books, but I sat and talked to him there because I told him that I had met one time, or heard speak, Agent Hostie. Agent Hostie was the the FBI agent that had the note that was from a Lee Harvey Oswald, you see, trying to drop the dime on what was going to go down. And Hostie had the note, and his superior officer told him to tear it up and flush it down the toilet. But then they sent Hostie out to Kansas City after that, and I met him one time, or heard him speak a number of years ago, late 80s, early 90s. But be that as it may, I'm sitting there talking to Groden, and it's drizzling a little bit of rain, and I'm inside the pergola with him, and he's sitting over there, and I'm kind of like standing against, with my back against the wall, and as there's like a doorway entrance, and about three or four steps down to the curb right before you go under the triple overpass. And then Groden was sitting opposite me with his back to where the grassy knoll, that area where the stockade fence was. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, I see this group of guys, and there's a guy who's maybe 35, 40, like an officer. And these guys are all in plain clothes, but it's definitely a military group. They're all in plain clothes, jeans or khakis or what have you, and, T-shirts, sweatshirts, that kind of stuff. And I'm sitting up there in the pergola. They can't see me, necessarily. The officer can anyway. And I overhear him talking to these. It was what it was about 12 guys. You know, a stick, an A-team, whatever, a group of, you know, tough military people. And the guy started talking. And I could overhear him clearly, and Grodin is listening too, because they don't see us up in the little pergola necessarily. And I hear the officer saying, we had a guy over there on top of that Daltex, or over on the Daltex. We had one up on top of the Dallas County Records. There was one up here in the nest, and you see in one back here. And so I came around the corner quickly while he was instructing these younger soldiers, and they weren't as young as, you know, raw recruits. These were special forces or paratroops or a mixed group of special operators. I don't know what, but probably Army, because what I said as I whipped around the corner, which startled the officer, and he looked up with his eyes big and bold, and then I yelled down at him, and they got drizzling rain, and I'm sitting there, and I'm in the echo chamber of the pergola, and I said, in a loud voice, I'll just paraphrase it here now, don't you all have that all on the sand table in the blockhouse in the back lot of Bragg? And this big, tall, strong, young black guy says, yeah, we do. Well, I knew that then was the master sergeant, because I don't think it was a group of SEALs. But if it would have been, it would have been the master chief, you see. But that was the master sergeant. And then they all were looking up at me, and then they see Grodin, and they don't recognize Grodin. But Grodin is looking at me going, oh, my God, what are you doing, you know? And I said, you know, don't you have it on the sand table in the blockhouse, the black back lot of Bragg? And, of course, they do. And I knew that because I had heard people say that they have the Kennedy assassination on a sand table or, like a model table to show people how the triangulation of crossfires, how you kill people, do political assassinations. So when the big black master sergeant or whatever says, yeah, we do, then the officer says, oh, come on, man, let's get away from this crazy person. That guy's crazy. I said, I'm not crazy. Y'all are the ones that killed him, aren't ya? You know? Come on, man, let's go up here. So he's hutting up the road. And then all of them look over at me with a big smile on their face. And then I'll never forget the guy at the last one coming up in the line. And they're all sort of in a military line. They're not marching, but they're in plain clothes walking. And this guy had a Surf Malibu shirt or something on, you know. And he was maybe about 5'8", thin, real, you know, fit like a surfer dude. We had the blonde hair, the blue eyes, the whole bit. And the crew cut, and he said, and he looks up at me, and he gives me the thumbs up and a big smile. Well, old Grodin says, oh, my God, I can't believe you did that. I said, well, you know, they did do it. And so that's my story, which is the only time I've ever been to Dealey Plaza, and I meet Grodin, and I meet, this A-team or a group of special ops being told about the Kennedy assassination by their officer, the whole nine yards, you know. And it's just amazing because this thing is still 56 years later, and you think they're going to get to the bottom of the coup on President Trump? When all of this information for 56 years has been researched and yards. And for you young people, if you've never ever saw any of the evidence or saw any of the hearings of the House Select Committee on Assassinations that was done in Congress, or if you never saw the Church Committee hearings on the CIA and all of the stuff being done, or if you've never been to Dallas and seen some of this stuff, you know, or if you've never talked, like I also talked to an old pork pie hat wearing, you know, like a fedora, not a pork pie, but an old fedora wearing hat of a private eye, famous private eye in Dallas that still does a little hotel work or did a few years back. And he knew Jack Ruby. He knew them all, you know. Then I've been to 544 Camp Street, you know, where it's the corner of Lafayette and Camp in New Orleans, and seen where Guy Bannister had the office and where Barry and Oswald. And I've been to all these places. But, you know, I'll tell you, I remember Bo Greitz talking about Mandarin, you know, the policeman in Dallas as being one of the shooters, badge man, you see. And I've seen the man who killed Kennedy, which used to be a big special that was always done on the History Channel, but now they don't do it. Okay. Now they don't do it, but that was one of the best VHS, and then it became a DVD, groups of tapes. If you can get a hold of the men who killed Kennedy, and then you can also, you should also watch Oliver Stone's movie as well. But there's a number of other good things. These books, I've told you, by Grodin, The Search for Lee Harvey Oswald, The Killing of the President, the photographic ones. But I also recommend old Jim Marr's Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy. And I also recommend JFK by L. Fletcher Prouty. L. Fletcher Prouty was in charge of all special ops for the Pentagon under General Edwin Lansdale. He was a colonel in the Air Force, and he ran all the stuff. They ran all the good stuff and made all the logistics and flew everybody, brought everybody in, did the whole nine yards. There's a number of other good books and things, too, and you need to look at them for specific reasons. There's a book called Best Evidence by David Lifton, who goes deep into the fact that there were two coffins, more than one coffin that was utilized on Air Force One. And the big fancy coffin did not necessarily have President Kennedy's body in it at the end of the deal, but that it was in a shipping coffin and was changed. And that a helicopter lands after at Andrews Air Force Base. When Air Force One lands and JFK gets off and gives a speech, you can see a helicopter land behind that plane, and you can see feet walking in shadows over there, and something is taken and put on that helicopter and flown. That was Kennedy's body with his whole bit. They flew him to Walter Reed Hospital, the Army Hospital, and altered the skull and the brain and all of that stuff. Altered the wounds, and then put them in an ambulance, and then in Lipton's Best Evidence, and there's videotape that went along with that, too, you get to hear all of the different people, and some of them are in The Men Who Killed Kennedy, who were then at Bethesda Naval Hospital, where there was a different ambulance than the official white Navy ambulance that had the big coffin in it, the fancy bronze casket. And, oh, ladies and gentlemen, this is most interesting. But isn't it interesting is that the guy who used to be President Kennedy's naval attaché and essentially his best bodyguard and security man, besides the Secret Service, which obviously did a little partying the night before, over in Fort Worth in an underground all-night outlaw-type nightclub with the strippers and the whole bit in it. The cage or whatever they call that thing. But the guy that should have been his buddy and watching out for him was given a plum assignment as a captain or boat driver of an extremely above top secret spy ship. It just happened to be the one that started the Vietnam War, not the fake thing that they all talk about or that the NSA historian talks about or this one talks about where they say that the Maddox never really got involved. There was never any threat or gunfire or anything. Because if you've ever known anybody who was on the Maddox, and the boat driver was a tough son of a buck named Boom Boom McLaughlin, all right? And old Boom Boom would have not allowed President Kennedy to drive that car without that top, I guarantee you. In spite of what anybody told him. But he was given an assignment, probably okayed by Kennedy, Secretary of Defense, and given a plum job on the Maddox, which then pulled a stay behind American of Chinese descent, who was then going to go up and be an agent in China, and they pulled him up a river, came out of that river, and then they were on the way back towards Vietnam when the Red Chinese told the North Vietnamese to attack that ship, and patrol boats started coming, and they started getting all kind of rounds going through the side of the vessel and hitting the side of the vessel and being attacked heavily. And that general quarters or all, you know, a battle station was called. And they were firing back at these boats. And then I remember hearing of somebody who was happened to be on the radio as a radio man. And he heard a Marine Corps aviator saying, "I'm coming down to get them suckers. Hold on, boys, I'm coming." He gave his call sign. And then at the last second, as he was getting ready to dive on the North Vietnamese patrol boats, this Marine Corps aviator, LBJ himself came on with his code name and ordered that Marine Corps aviator to stand down, or he would personally see to it that he was keel hauled on the side of a ship. So isn't it interesting? Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I was going to say that, and I'm looking at the combination of all the different items that puts our current president in the same kind of trick bag. And the threats to him are because of who he's making mad. The game plan of the Illuminati, the game plan of the Luciferians, the game plan of the New World Order people, the game plan of the CIA, NSA, DIA, EIEIOs, the banks, the whole nine yards. Those who would subjugate America and then merge it into the trilateral world and then on into the world, the New World Order, you see. I I know Mr. Hodges has written a pretty good piece on this up at stevequayle.com. Stevequayle.com. And incidentally, when you go up to stevequayle.com, click on his Q-Files 2.0 and sign up for that. And then also the new Branson Conference coming up in July on world catastrophes and things. It's going to blow your mind. And Steve Quayle told me the other night, he said, you know, Hawk, he said, I don't know if we'll ever have another one after this because the timing is getting to be so close to something big happening. So stevequayle.com. You can also pick up some of Steve's books and DVDs while you're there. I'm telling you, Empire Beneath the Ice, Terminated, The End of Man is Here, Angel Wars, his Giants books, Exogenesis, they're just incredible. And if you don't ever know about it, one of his books is Aliens and Fallen Angels. Tremendous book. Promise of the Premise. Premise of the Promise. Also good. So, ladies and gentlemen, go up there, and then if you want to get you some gold and silver, you call them up at 406-586-4840. 406-586-4840. If you get Steve or Daryl or Tyler, Steve's son, you tell them old Hawk sent you, and if you want to get you some gold or silver or buy some of the books or DVDs or sign up for the Branson Conference, pick up those DVDs from the last one they did. Those are tremendous. I was watching those the other night. Just incredible information that if you have not provided the information to your children or to your grandchildren or to your neighbors so that they understand what is going to come upon this planet, then you probably should. Now, let me just say this, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to keep old Hawk swinging in the game, striking blows against the Lucys, against the enemies of Lord Jesus, and at the same time providing whatever I can to be of service to warn you, the remnant, against what is coming and how to prepare, and also to stand along with you and try to hopefully have some inspiration and some appeal, because I'm out here with you. Just like you're out here, I'm out here. You want to keep old Hawk on the air, keep me in the game, and I hope you do. Any assistance is most welcome or needed. Can be sent to Hawk, 3965 West 83rd Street, number 356, Prairie Village, Kansas, 66208. Hawk, 3965 West 83rd Street, number 356, Prairie Village, Kansas, 66208. Can be FRNs, be a silver quarter, silver dime, silver dollar, piece of gold, check, money order. May the Lord return it to you 10,000 fold. And that's how I've stayed on all these years, 15 years, by the grace of Lord Jesus and with your assistance. And this is what I do. And a lot of you know that not much else that I really can at this point do, because certain things have got nailed up in this fight that I've been involved in on behalf of the Lord. Now, I'll tell you something else. If you have any needs for a holster, a leather saddle, panniers, let's say you got a wonderful horse, you need a real true saddle. Or you got a kid who's going to ride and you're getting them a new thing. You want to get them a saddle they can ride till the end of time, or at least till the cows come home. or if you want panniers or saddlebags or scabbards for a rifle or shotgun. If you want canteens, if you want, you know, any kind of leather product, or if you want a custom-made knife that will be sharp as heck and not be turned away for biting, skinning, or sticking or stabbing, if you know what I mean. Have it made for you. Go to sharpsaddles.com, 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 and tell them that Hawk sent you. Now, if you've looked at the thing and you've seen the new little revelation this morning, WAPO, Washington Post story, and some others, low-level FBI lawyer, who's been fired, by the way, may have just been changing certain words and certain portions of the FISA application. But according to the story of the Washington Post, oh, it didn't invalidate the whole FISA app. Oh, it's not the fruit of the poison tree, you know? The FBI lawyer, FBI fidelity, bravery, integrity. That FBI lawyer is the one who changed and altered the FISA court application. Lied on the FISA court application? I suppose that's what integrity stands for, is the second letter of lie, which is the I, right? So, but here's the operative word. Low level, quote unquote. This is a trial balloon, ladies and gentlemen. You remember I've told you from the beginning that Barr was going to try to put a cap on this whole thing. You even see in the testimony of Fiona Hill, which I told you yesterday, talking about the anti-Semitic aspect of it. And now Trump, I see Alex picked up on that and had a whole spread on it today on his site. But I was telling you yesterday night that Fiona Hill is probably, allegedly, a mole for Soros, but she tried to say, well, anything about globalism or about Soros is anti-Semitic. And I pointed out that Soros, as a nominally a young Jewish man, rode around with the Nazi officer who took control and stole the Jewish homes and property. And on 60 Minutes, he said, Soros said, that it was some of the best times of his life. And that's where he started making his cash, okay? And
well, ladies and gentlemen, after I said they knocked me off the air, now they've knocked me up again because I went right back to it. See, they want you to stumble around and sound like a dummy. And they want you to be out there and say, well, this guy's not very professional. I'm not going to listen to him anymore. No. When you're over the target, old Bo Gratz used to always say, when you're over the target is when you get the flack. Let me tell you. So Barr is going to try to still take this thing and cover it up. But he's got to see how far he can play it. Because the cat has come out of the bag so much that if he doesn't do it, there'll still be hell to pay in the public, because people are not going to stand for it, because you know who should be arrested and indicted and convicted and sent to prison? Brennan, Clapper, Comey, McCabe, Schrock, Page, Baker, Orr, Old Man Orr, Nellie Orr, Steele, and a whole bunch of others. And they ought to take them, and they ought to put them, and they ought to put them in with the guys named Bubba. You know, 6'8", 450 pounds, you know what I'm saying? And not send them to the little country club camp where they make their little biting rings in the metal shop and then try to hut their way through. Got to send them to, I don't know, why don't you send them to San Q or Statesville Prison, Joliet is what I'm trying to say, or to somewhere like that, or Atlanta, or send them to the SHU. See how they like the SHU, you know, up in Colorado. Or maybe they could send them to Rikers. That'd be just great. Put them into Rikers. They could have a lot of fun out there. What I'm trying to say is this. Barr will try to go for the low level, FBI lawyer, the lower hanging fruit, and try to cap it up there. And then Horowitz says, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then Fiona Hill, what did she say? Oh, that it is in the interest of the Russians to cause America to be fighting against each other. So then you're hearing all these people say, including Lindsey Graham, who's going to have the hearing. And prior to that, he was saying he was going to get to the bottom of this. He was going to have a hearing, and by golly, they were going to get to the bottom of all this stuff. This coup d'etat against the president and the witch hunt. Now he's saying, well, a lot of people are in for revenge. Well, I'm not. In other words, he's going to go mild on the hearing. I believe in Horowitz. So they can use Horowitz, who has no criminal power, but he can investigate. You got Bull Durham out there with the subpoenas and with the grand juries and all of that, but he can only go after so much, and then even at that, he's working for Barr. Now, Wimpy Barr is CIA all the way. But I'm going to say this, Mr. Barr, this is time to flush it all out again like was done. And when you even had to bring Helms up to the church committee hearings. And there were other hearings you don't talk about, too. You know, like the certain senator from Arkansas back then, you know, that you can't even find those hearings and things. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make that a little assignment. I'm not going to give you his name. Let's see if you can find an Arkansas senator back from the era of the late 60s who had hearings and see if you find any record of them. You won't. You'll find a reference or something to it. But I also knew somebody who testified before that and gave evidence, you see. So you've got this whole idea that I hear other people say, like even Jim Jordan. And I don't know if Jim Jordan is even aware. But Jim says, and here we have two American citizens that the whole system of surveillance was weaponized against them. Probably the only time in the history of the country. No, Mr. Jordan, it is not. Representative Jordan, it is not. And I'm going to read to you right now a little bit of a something right here. It's part of the thing I read to you before from the title. Is Tapping President Trump's Wires, A Spy Hunter's Perspective. The authors are James M. Atkinson and Stan Spring. Publication date was March 17th, 2017. And they do basically tell you how President Trump was wiretapped and how it's always done. And I've read part of this to you before, and I just thought I ought to probably read a little bit more. For example, the U.S. government has a series of contracts with AT&T in which AT&T agrees to permit the federal government unsupervised access to all customer communications that passed over its undersea cables, domestic transmission facilities, and domestic switching system. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's pretty much all voice data, everything that goes through all the either domestic or foreign undersea cables or domestic transmission facilities, fiber optics, whatever. In these documents, AT&T is given a special code name. Each of its facilities where this sort of eavesdropping takes place is given different code names. For example, there are several major access points that are on domestic soil, which AT&T, which is called Fairview, has given the NSA access to, and which use location code names such as Killington, Copper Mountain, Maverick, Whistler, Sun Valley, Cliffside, Tahoe, Breckenridge, Eagle, Eden, Titan Point, which is 33 Thomas Street in New York City, 33, huh? Pinecone, Silver Colam, and others. To take this one more step, the AT&T Longlines building at 33 Thomas Street, codenamed Titan Point, is operated by AT&T under a codename of Lithium, with Rimrock Access, a codename up for a hack into the 4ESS switching system, and also to the codename Rimrock program by way of satellite dishes on the roof. Thus, by the way of the cable vault in the third basement, virtually anything in New York City can be tapped or tracked, and vast swaths of inside of this building, as well as access to the fiber optic system, are rented to the NSA and even to the FBI. So I can go into all these other things. Corporate networks, AT&T Blarney, local area network, High Decibel. Corporate AT&T networks with the code name of Pinwheel Ragtime Servers. And all of this stuff. Then you go, and on page 10 of this report, you go in there and take a look at it, and then it tells you in this, let me get to it real quick, I know we're running out of time. We get to it real quick. The spy hunter is deploying his or her special skills and equipment. It is not uncommon to find a skyscraper on Park Avenue in New York City with a comprehensive state-of-the-art and fiber optic communication system. This system's optical fibers initially passed a Pearl Street, Hudson, 8th Avenue, or Broad Street, or any of a dozen other similar interconnected communications facilities in New York City. From one of these locations, the skyscraper's communications, or in New Jersey, bounce over all of the numerous undersea cable stations located on Long Island or in New Jersey. And from one of these points, the communications, listen to this, are delivered by undersea cable to England or Canada. When the communications are received in England, they then return them to the United States to the phone company on Broad Street or Pearl Street after passing through a GCHQ beam splitter and then an NSA-controlled beam splitter. And then you see that it's delivered back around, and this is called the New York Reach Around. The signals that's from the skyscraper on Park Avenue, they actually have merely been routed to Canada, England via East Coast fibers, but then they ended up getting rerouted back through Australia and New Zealand systems, and then re-enter the United States on the West Coast, pass through the country to return to New York City. Just so all five nations, the five eyes, get access to some business executive calling in a pizza order to the restaurant down the street from his office during his presidential campaign. They're doing this all the time, ladies and gentlemen. The NSA and the FBI are monitoring every single communication in the United States and the world over. They're tracking them, grabbing them, taking them up. They're in partnership with the Five Eyes, the GCHQ, the Canadians, the Australians, and the New Zealand people, the Kiwis. And so Representative Jordan, they don't have to go to a FISA court to do it. They ostensibly are supposed to go. But everybody I hear talks about it, how they have to go in and talk to the judges and all that. The judge didn't buy the rubber stamp. But now we have a case. And for the first time, we've seen a falsified, altered, lying piece of crap FBI document. The integrity, huh? Ladies and gentlemen, don't ever talk to anybody from the federal government without an attorney present. You just say, Fifth Amendment, I need an attorney, ain't going to talk to you, then they're going to beat you, shoot you, kill you, let them do it. Because I'm going to tell you what, the Lord Jesus and our Father in heaven sees just how much their integrity really means something. They got about as much integrity as a ham sandwich. Don't go into these people's Luciferian night without a fight. Let me tell you. This is ridiculous. So if you want to do something, just take a postcard, a regular postcard, and you send it to your representative and you say, you tell Attorney General Barr to go after Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Page, Strzok, McCabe, Baker, Orr. And that will be the only thing that is acceptable, okay? And use block print and print it out. Go after them and go after them on the stuff. And that is the only way you're going to do it. You tell them that. And demand that they be gone after. Because I think that they're still going to try to get a couple low-level guys and pop them. Maybe they go after Strzok and McCabe or, you know, and maybe let Page off because she did tell the truth or whatever. And they're just going to kind of half dance it. And in the interest of healing America and bringing everybody back to the fold and where they can trust the government of the United States and to end the partisan bickering and all of the stuff, let's just go ahead and start over and put new security methods in there to make sure this doesn't happen again. And then it will happen again. Because 56 years ago, the same people shot and arranged for President John Fitzgerald Kennedy to be assassinated in Navy Plaza in Dallas. And he made the Federal Reserve mad. And it wasn't silver certificates. It was called United States currency. It said United States currency at the top. And guess what that means? It was backed with the full faith and credit of the United States, but it was not borrowed from the Federal Reserve. If it says Federal Reserve note, then that means you owe interest to the Federal Reserve Bank for issuing the currency that Congress is supposed to be able to coin and regulate the value thereof. It was United States currency, and Kennedy did it, and you could do that today. You could print up United States currency. You could pay off the United States debt with United States currency and stop the interest payments. Or if you wanted to do something for the military, you could issue United States currency. Non-interest bearing. Well, no wonder they got him mad, you know? They were mad at him. And then the CIA wanted to run dope with Kunsaw and the Shan States. And keep rolling and rolling and rolling on it all. And then use that to finance the wars. Vietnam, but first it was Laos, you see. And old Ralph Johnson, an advertising executive from Chicago, Illinois, came over on the donkey in, you know, Laos about 1954 and, you know, all of that. But you see, if you've got Oliver Stone's movie, you might want to watch that tonight. Or if you can find The Man Who Killed Kennedy and get you that and watch that. But let me say this to you, ladies and gentlemen. You'd better get prepared for what is going to come, because there is going to be a reckoning that you're not going to believe. And Tennessee is going to think, well, Trump's going to win now, and he may in fact win, but I'm going to tell you what. You got Bolton who could come out, and Bolton could vote. And it depends. He's got a $2 to $3 million, allegedly, $2 to $3 million book contract. And then maybe somebody can pad that with a little bit more, and, you know, he could, shave his mustache, dye his hair, get a crew cut, and lose 20 pounds and go live on Pago on an island somewhere, you know, with dancing boys and girls or whatever he likes, all right? Don't go into their Luciferian nightdown fight. Stand for the Lord Jesus. Stand for your family. Protect your home. Stand for your Bill of Rights. Mighty men and women of valor, I know you can strike a blow against the loose with your high tech. Please do so tonight. Let them have it for a change. Instead of letting the Chinese, the fallen angels, play games and create earthquakes on us again. Bendigo Raiders, I know you're ready. Look for Lieutenant Tanner to help you. And old Mickey LaPua, Mickey, you be the man. Keep your eye on the optics and squeeze it. Ladies and gentlemen, good night. May Lord Jesus protect you against all evil and provide you with superabundance so that you might prepare. Good night.